going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan. Sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right. That's Fallout Boy is my wheelhouse, apparently. All right, 104, McMonagle here with you on The Fan on this Monday morning. Talking about Shedeur Sanders there at the end. I mean, just, I found it, I mean, extremely, and I'll be rooting. I understand, you could say whatever you want. And clearly he didn't do himself any favors in these meetings, right? There's no doubt. Whatever the case may be. And then with the Giants specifically, I guess there was an issue where he was unprepared. Dable called him out on it a little bit, which is common. I mean, John Gruden doesn't even work for NFL teams. Watch his videos. He is laying into these kids. Like, how you respond to that is part of what they're looking for. So sometimes they are a little critical of you, and they do, you know, give you a little bit where maybe you weren't expecting it. And apparently, Shedeur Sanders didn't like how Dable responded to him, or how Dable questioned him, or how Dable got on him, and it led to a bad feeling for the Giants. Now, did that happen? Dable just said, no, look, I had great meetings with everybody. You know, he's not going to tell you anything, but it's been widely reported. And clearly, they preferred Ward, first off, because they were willing to trade a first-round pick for him, and Jackson Dart. But I got to tell you, I wasn't in the meetings. I don't know, but I kind of respected the kid. I've seen him. You know, he turned two college programs around. He's a bit brash, no doubt. I'm going to be rooting hard for him. I think it's ridiculous that five quarterbacks were taken in front of him. I think it's ridiculous he fell to the fifth round. And I understand why, and I understand everything that, and surely his father didn't help him. Like, this whole situation did not help him in any way. But I am going to be rooting for him. And let's be totally honest with you. He's the best quarterback the Cleveland Browns have right now. You look, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and Gabriel. Like, he's the best quarterback in that room. If they want to win week one, they put Shedeur Sanders in there. Like, he's the best quarterback in the room. And they picked him fifth in the fifth round. I am going to be rooting hard for this kid to have a great NFL career because I felt like he was done dirty. Then you get to the nonsense of the prank phone call from Jax Ulbrich, the son of former Jets head coach. And, like, the idea, I mean, it makes him look terrible. I felt bad for Shedeur Sanders watching the video. Then, you know, Jax Ulbrich puts it up on social media, whoever put it up on social media, for everyone to see. Apparently, there's been reporting that Tyler Warren, tight end out of Penn State, who the Jets passed on at seven, while the Jets were on the clock, was called and pranked by the same number Shedeur Sanders was. I mean, Jeff Ulbrich just leaves his computer open with all these prospects' numbers on it. He looks terrible. His son had to apologize publicly. And I'll give it to Shedeur Sanders, too, because Jax, in his apology on social media, thanked Shedeur for taking his phone call to let him apologize to him. All right, I think Shedeur went through the ringer here, man. It is what he just had to experience was extremely difficult. I don't think it's warranted. I think talent-wise, you can't tell me. I'm sorry, you cannot tell me this kid was a fifth-round pick talent-wise. You just can't tell me. And I know teams wanted to stay away, and I know there was only a small group of teams looking for a starting quarterback here or willing to take one at the top of the draft in the first, you know, with their first two picks. You're talking about the Saints, clearly the Giants, maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers, a handful of teams. And if he narrowed that circle by being, you know, having a terrible meeting with Brian Daboll, apparently the same thing with the Saints. He hurt himself, there's no doubt. But you could talk about a ton of teams like me and Fliegelman were just talking about during the break. I mean, I know we all love Zach Wilson. He is the backup in Miami. He's the backup quarterback in Miami. I'm sorry, he stinks. And when you look at what the Dolphins have done and what Mike McDaniel's done with that offense, he is a right-handed Tua. That's who Sanders is. He is a pinpoint accurate pocket passer. That's what he is. He is like the perfect guy to have as your backup quarterback. And let's be honest, with the Tua injuries and everything, at any moment, he could be your guy. You're telling me the Miami Dolphins couldn't waste a third, fourth round pick on Shedeur Sanders? And instead are happy going with Zach Wilson? Like, I'm so many things. And I talked about it on Friday after he got skipped, passed over for the first round. I thought the Steelers made a mistake. And the Steelers kept passing on him and passing on him. Like, is he going to be a superstar? I don't know. But, yeah, okay, I'll give it to you. Let's say for argument's sake he's not going to be because he doesn't have the tool set that would jump out at you that makes you think he's going to be a superstar in this league. Fine. But is he going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL? I think he's got an excellent chance to do so. Can he be Geno Smith? That's the name we talked about on Friday and some comps I've heard. Oh, he's like Geno Smith. You don't draft Geno Smith in the first round. Okay, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you're a team that has a good roster around it that could use a quarterback, use a backup quarterback because, you know, you never know. You don't want a quarterback injury to ruin your season. A cheap Geno Smith for 4 years once you get past the first round? But even with the Steelers in the first round, for 5 years, you get a cheap, inexpensive Geno Smith, who the Raiders had to just pay how much money to bring on their team. I'll take Geno Smith for nothing for 5 years and try and win with a good roster and an excellent head coach and a program with Pittsburgh that's, you know, produced winning season after winning season. Yeah, I'll take that as opposed to whatever I'm dealing with now. And I know we think that Aaron Rodgers is coming, but maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Maybe you get to play hardball if Sanders signs or you draft Sanders. Like, I don't know. Something, you're telling me this kid is only worth the fifth round pick? Normally, I would tell you yes. Under normal circumstances, I would say, hey, look, the NFL spoke. We all got it wrong. He's not nearly as talented as we thought. At least that's how the NFL perceives it. But, I mean, something's up. And I think it has more to do with his father in these meetings. And then just the idea of, well, once I decide he's not my starting quarterback or my future starting quarterback and I haven't invested enough of a pick to really, I have to play him, well, then is he really worth the headache of being a backup? Is it worth bringing him in unhappy after I passed him by? Now, that's something We'll see how he reacts in Cleveland. Not only did they pass over him constantly, they took another quarterback who nobody thought was anywhere near as good as him ahead of him. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic with that team, but ultimately, I think Cleveland had an unbelievable draft right there. An unbelievable draft pick in the fifth round. I think they got their best quarterback on their roster in the fifth round. I don't know how many teams can say they've done that. Right, I know, and it ends up happening, right? We could Tom Brady, clearly, but in the fifth, I don't know how many teams could ever leave a draft and say, I got my most talented quarterback on my roster with my fifth pick, or in the just fifth round. I forget if it was exactly their fifth pick. I know they made trades. Like, crazy. And watching it was nuts. And watching the coverage of it, I know it seems to, like, bother people. It's driving everyone crazy, the amount of coverage. And I guess, like, and then the other thing is Cam Ward, apparently, you know, we're saying it's the least attention we've ever paid to a first overall pick. And I guess that's fair, but also, I don't know. I find, like, when you know who it's going to be, like, it's just everyone knew they were going to take him. Like, I feel like the first pick oftentimes doesn't get the most amount of coverage. Yeah, go ahead, Fleeks. You got an example of a first-round pick not getting a lot of coverage?
Yeah, the 06 draft, Mario Williams, because still all anybody cared about was Reggie Bush, Matt Leiner, Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
And we found out the night before that Williams was going to be the pick.
Right, found out the night before, yeah. We've known for, and that was, yeah, we've known for a while it's Cam Ward. Like, it's just a non-story. I don't think it's anything to do with Cam Ward. I mean, he's clearly, without question, perceived in the NFL as the best quarterback in this draft. The Giants offered a first-round pick for him. A first-round pick.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
And that's another thing that bothers me. I don't know why this bothers me so much, but so many people are saying it. And I don't want to get in the weeds with this, but I have to admit, it bothers the hell out of me. When people include, we'll get to the Giants draft in particular. I wanted to talk about Shedeur Sanders because that really was the story of the draft. But the Giants obviously traded back into the first round for Jackson Dart. They gave up a third round pick this year, the 99th pick overall. And then they gave up next year's third. And they swapped the second round pick. And I know this is stupid, and I'm not going to spend much time on it, but it bothers the hell out of me when people say, oh my God, for Jackson Dart, you gave up a second round pick and two thirds for Jackson Dart? And it just drives me nuts. They did not give up a second round pick. They gave up two third round picks for the right to take that second round pick early. Like, I don't know why. It just bothers me. I hate that. They got a player. They made that pick. Those two third-round picks are gone. They belong to other teams. They're not going to get a player for those picks. They got the player with that second-round pick. They moved up and took it early. They did not also trade away a second-round pick. I'm watching Colin Cowherd, and I'm not just to get on him because I see a million people do it. But he's like, this Giant team, bereft of talent, is trading away a high second-round pick and two-thirds? That's three starters right there. How does the team with the amount of talent the Giants have trade away three starters? If they were sitting there in the second round, they would have taken Jackson Dart had he been there. They got a player. They did not give up that second-round pick. They swapped it for a first-round pick. They gave up two-thirds. That's it. I don't want to scream about this forever, but I see people say it all the time, left and right. And the Knicks give up a second-round pick and two-thirds. I know for news reporting purposes, technically that was the trade, but people act like, oh, my God, how do you give up a second and two-thirds for Jackson Dart? It's not a second and two-thirds. It's two-thirds. It's driving me crazy. And they got him for 5 years. Like, people are like, oh, the Cowboys traded a fifth and a seventh for Milton. Isn't that a better trade? I'm like, no. It's not a better trade. It's not. Joe Milton's got three more years, and the Cowboys have a starting quarterback. He's never going to see the field. Jackson Dart's going to, they traded up 2/3 to get Jackson Dart for 5 years. Five. People, I don't know why it bothers me. I love the Giants trade. The draft, rather. Love the. We'll get into it more. 888-808. I'm going to get back to the calls here. 888-808-1019. Love the Giants draft. We'll get into all the picks. I think, you know, we'll get into it. They have a real identity. I know everyone's saying it, but it's true. That you can. And I don't know if it's the first one they've had in the last handful of years, but right now, you know, they are going to try and get after the quarterback. I mean, that group is going to be. We talk about it. Everyone calls up. You know, when the Giants won their Super Bowls with Eli Manning, what'd they do? Huh? You tell me, Chris. What'd they do? They had a pass rush. They got after Tom Brady. Don't tell me they need a quarterback. Don't tell me what they need to get back to rushing the passer. Well, that's what they are now. They have a legitimate defensive front. That's going to be the strength of their team. They are going to get after the quarterback. This defense is going to be the strength of this team. I think they should be better offensively, but this is a hard nose. Get after the quarterback. Make the quarterback's life hell. They've added the best cornerback in free agency. They added a safety in free agency. And they just went and drafted an edge rusher, a defensive tackle. They've done a really... That defense is going to be the hallmark of this team. And then, let alone, obviously, the Jackson Dart trade, which I love. I love it. I don't know what kind of quarterback Jackson Dart's going to be. I'll be totally honest with you. Who the hell knows? But I know Brian Daboll loved him. I know that's the quarterback they wanted. They showed an urgency to go get him. I'm thrilled with the Giants draft. And obviously also the running back out of Arizona State that everybody loves. He's a hard-nosed guy. You add him and Tracy to that offense. It should help the offensive run game. Like, we'll see. I think the Giants have a chance to be better than people think. I really do. I think they have a chance to win enough games to not play Jackson Dart all year. And then we'll get to the Jets draft, which I think early on they did a nice job and then took some big swings on players who probably they valued more than what we're hearing the rest of the NFL did. But we'll get to that later. 888-808-1019. Philip in Jamaica has been holding on for a while. Thank you for holding, Phil. What's going on, man?
Thanks for taking my call. First of all, I want to make a Mets point. But I want to say with the Nick game,
yeah,
the way it was referee. If you ask all the coaches, like the Tibbs, they just want consistency. And they haven't called fouls the whole game, so you can't call a touch foul at the end of the game and put the game online the way it was officiated. So it would have been a travesty if the foul was called at the end of the game.
I agree with you. That would have been far worse to me and far more of a travesty, as you said eloquently, than non-foul. I totally agree. Ending that game at the foul line, the way that game was officiated, would have been a travesty.
Yeah, but I want to get to Juan Soto, okay?
Okay.
A lot of people are calling up saying Soto's playing bad, you know, he's not mm-hmm. hitting the way he should. But here's my point with Soto. First of all, he's an elite hitter. And has anyone thought they're pitching tougher because he doesn't have Judge to protect him? He has Alonso, and Alonso's doing great because he's getting the pitches because the pitchers are pitching tougher than Soto. So even though Soto isn't hitting as well, he's making the players around, and particularly Pete Alonso, hit better because Alonso's better pitches to hit.
Yeah, I mean, look, would anybody benefit from Juan Soto hitting in front of him? I suppose. I don't want to just dismiss it away for Pete Alonso. I mean, is he, you know, Pete Alonso's doing what he's doing because he's off to a great start. I don't think it's just because Juan Soto, because here's the issue. Although 370 is a very good on base percentage for the normal human, it's not like world-class Juan Soto, so it's not like he's on base. I mean, he's on base a pretty good amount. It's better than whoever else has been hitting in front of Pete Alonso in his Met career. But yeah, I mean, look, he hasn't been good. He's had really meek at-bats. He hasn't been driving the baseball. His slugging percentage is under 400. I mean, his slugging percentage is 396, which is very, very different for Juan Soto. And he loses the ball in the sun today, which started the rally that began to blow the game as they gave up five runs in the seventh. And it kind of started with his losing the ball in the sun. He had a ball up against the wall the other day where it went in and out of his glove. Look, he's not a great defender. He threw a guy out at home, too. I mean, I think, and I said this last year, so I have to be fair, and I think it's true, he is a, to me, slightly below average right fielder. I think it is way overblown how bad he is in the outfield. I think he's a, I don't think he really hurts you that bad out there. One, he's got a strong arm, and it's fairly accurate. I think he does a good job throwing people out. I think he's done a good job, you know, throwing to the bases and with his outfield assists. He's not fleet of foot. He doesn't get a tremendous jump. He's just not a great outfielder, but I don't think he's a butcher out there. I don't think he's awful. I don't view him in the way he plays necessarily. I know body type, speed, just wanting to save him for his at-bats. There's a lot that would go into making him a DH, but I don't think the way he plays right field necessarily dictates, oh, he'll be a DH in 2 years. Like, he's not that bad. I really don't think he's that bad. He's not so bad that you're like, oh, geez, there's a DH. He doesn't have a position. No, he has a position. It's right field. He's just not excellent at it. He's slightly below average. At least that's how I figure. But yeah, no, look, there is no doubt. And he's hurt them. He hasn't come through in clutch situations. He's really struggled. He's hitting .248. And when you and the thing that really I think bothers Met fans the most is when you compare it to how he performed at the beginning of the year for the Yankees last year. He started off really hot with the Yankees. It was instant. It was instant last year. The vibes were great around Juan Soto, not just the team, but around Juan Soto specifically. The vibes were great last year at the start of the year. Judge was slumping, and Soto was killing it. Him, he was the main reason, offensively, the starting pitching happened to be doing incredibly well last year, even without Cole at the start of the year. But offensively, he was the driving force of that team for the first month and a half. It was the best he was in a Yankee uniform. Then in the postseason, he was great again. And he was great all year, obviously. He had a tremendous year. But really, the best of Juan Soto and what really impacted the Yankees the most was that first month when Judge was struggling. He was incredible. So, yeah, Met fans were expecting it from the jump. Him getting off to this great start and being Juan Soto right off the bat. And he just hasn't been. And the at-bats don't look the same. I'll be honest with you. As much as I'll downplay it and tell you I don't think too much into body language, and I'm not saying that he's unhappy. I certainly don't think he's regretting his decision to be a Met. I don't think he's unhappy. We saw him trying to rip the shirt off of Marte when he had the walk-off hit the other day. Like, I think he's perfectly happy. I'm sure he's very happy with his decision. God knows there's enough money, but I also think he's happy with the Mets. Plus, they're winning. But his at-bats, if you're just being honest and fair, he's going through a funk right now and a slide, and his body language isn't great. The Soto shuffle, that normal Soto shuffle, the vibe, you know, it just doesn't look the same. He doesn't look as comfortable at the plate now for whatever reason because he's not going well. I don't think there's anything more to read into it than that. But yeah, when I watched the games, I watched every single one of Soto's at bats last year. When I watch them now, he doesn't have that same kind of feel. But it's probably because he's hitting .248, and I don't ever remember a stretch of Juan Soto hitting .248 for the Yankees last year. But last year was a miracle. It was a very nice run for him. It was the best year of his career. But having said that, he's still on base .374. He's on base 374%, 37% of the time. Not 300% of the time. That'd be really impressive. 37% of the time. But, I mean, right now, the issue for the Mets is as they get another great pitching performance from McGill, they got another great pitching performance from my guy, Clay Holmes, who's off to an incredible start. I still think he's going to hit a wall a bit. But right now, he has been incredible. And this starting pitching is another 9 strikeouts from McGill. The problem right now is the Mets bullpen. Buteau has not been the same. He had a terrible inning in this game yesterday. He gave up 3 runs, gave up a big 3-run home run to make it after, you know, it being 7-1. He gave up 3 runs in the 7th and then ended up making it 7-6. He's been really wildly inconsistent and was terrible yesterday. Stanek has blown a couple of games here in this series against the Nats. You don't know what's going on with Diaz, obviously just being overly protective with a little bit of a hip issue right now. And he had some hip cramping and different things, so he wasn't able to go. And Minter is going to go on, has just been placed on the IL with a lat strain. So, like, right now, this bullpen that has been, I mean, I don't know the numbers offhand, but you can't be better. This has been the best bullpen in Major League Baseball. That's how good they've been. And right now, they're starting to see a little bit of cracks. You've got an injury to Minter. You've got, at least, even if you don't want to call it an injury, something nagging your closer Diaz. And Buteau has not been nearly as good as he was last year. And eventually, you know, Reed Garrett and these guys are going to come back to earth a little bit. And the starting rotation is going to come back to earth a little bit. And this was really the first devastating loss. Now, I know they lost the other night. This is a game that you're up 6 runs in the seventh inning against the Nationals. Now, I know the Nationals are better. They got some young players. Woods are really, you know, a bright young star here. They're better than just to say the Nationals, but still, it's the Nationals. You've got a 6-run lead in the seventh inning. That's a game you can't lose, and this Met team hasn't come close to losing. This was the real first devastating loss for the Mets. But, I mean, having said that, I still got another great starting pitching performance. I'm dealing with some injuries in the bullpen. My offense scored 7 runs, and I'm 10 games over 500 and in first place. Like, to me, it's not a devastating loss. It sucks. It's a gut punch. It's a game you never expect to lose up 6 runs in the seventh. But, I mean, to me, it's still been, you have a chance to split the series later today. And you're still getting great. That's what's going to be what scares me. And now the injuries to the bullpen do worry me, there's no doubt. And hopefully, you know, Diaz is clearly, whatever we think of him, is clearly extremely important to this team. He's a huge part of this bullpen. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. As great as Reed Garrett's been, and as great as Barazza has been, as, you know, great as Kranick has been, Diaz is the guy. They need Diaz healthy and pitching well. So right now, with the way Buteau is going, the injury to Minter, and the questions around Diaz, I am concerned about the bullpen. But the offense is starting to get better, despite having, you know, still games where, Alvarez's 2-run home run is the only runs they scored the other day. The offense isn't clicking necessarily, but you're starting to see signs of it coming out. Alvarez is back. McNeil is back. They sent down Beatty. The offense is starting to get going. But I'll be totally honest with you. With the Mets, to me, I'm not going to worry, especially about a team playing as well as they're playing, 10 games over 500. I'm not going to start worrying about the Mets until the starting pitching falters. And you are still getting great start after great start after great start. Even in this game, McGill was good. He ends up giving up 3 runs, but McGill goes 6 1/3, gives up 3 runs. I'll take that from McGill any day of the week. He throws 105 pitches. He's got an ERA of 1.7. He struck out 9 guys after striking out 10 guys in his last start. Like, and Clay Holmes doesn't give up runs. And Griffin Cannon gets out of every jam he finds himself in. Like, the starting pitching has been unstoppable. And that's what, like, to me, it was my biggest question mark of the team heading into the season. And right now, it's their biggest strength. And until that falters, like, that's what would really concern me. The injuries are troubling in the bullpen. The offense hasn't gotten going, like, to what the level you expect yet. But, you know, Vientos clearly with the big triple the other night down the line, he's starting to come out of it. You know, obviously, Lindor has been hot. Alonso's been on fire. You're still, you know, Torrens has been really good. Now you've got Alvarez back. The offense hasn't been clicking. But I expect it to still perform. They scored 7 runs in this game. The injuries to the bullpen are scary. But to me, as long as they continue to get the starting pitching they're getting, I'm not overly concerned about the Mets just yet. 888-808-1019. Let's take Frank in Palisades Park. What's up, Frank?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy.
I just want to talk about Shador Sanders. I mean, partly it was his father, but his father was a Hall of Famer. It couldn't have been all on him. It was Shador. If those stories are true, where he showed up listening to music,
yeah,
that's on Shador. Think about this. All the GMs were worried that they were getting the second coming of Ryan Leaf. The guy was immature, did not handle his professional career well, and he was out of the league in 2 years. They were all terrified. That's why he went down the If he's as talented as he is, if you say he's that talented, why would they keep passing on him? They had to be terrified.
Yeah, Melissa, I don't... Look, we all understood he wasn't like uber talented, where if he was in last year's draft class, he's the fourth or fifth best quarterback. And like, he's a first round player. Like that, to me, the talent was first, especially at the position. The talent was first round. Maybe not top pick, maybe not top 10, first round. I felt he was a first round talent. Now, again, Ryan Leaf is, you're going to compare him to – everyone's terrified to get one of the biggest busts in the history of the NFL. But, like, again, this is a guy who made, what, $6 million last year at Colorado? Like, he's kind of been a professional football player already. He's bounced around a couple different colleges. He's grown up the son of Deion Sanders. It's not like suddenly the bright lights and the fame are going to get to him. The money's not going to get to him. Like, I don't know. I mean, sure, we all concerned of busts. And, yeah, he had an attitude a problem, I guess. I understand that. I'd have to see is this the first player ever to be this bad in these meetings? I don't know. And, yeah, listen, if he's taking phone calls during it, if he's like, excuse me, I have to take this. And, you know, he's blaring headphones. It's a bad look. Don't get me wrong. But the fall has been... the fifth round? And then, again, you say they're terrified. You're not terrified of a Ryan Leaf on day three. I mean, you're not terrified of a Ryan Leaf in the third round. You can't have a Ryan Leaf in the third round. Ryan Leaf was the second overall pick. You can't have a Ryan Leaf in the third round. I'm not saying, okay, he fell out of the first. Okay, that's somewhat reasonable. Out of the second? Out of the third? Out of the fourth? In a league that... Right, the Ravens drafted a guy who's been accused of sexual assault by two different women at college and high school. Like that, I mean, they weren't afraid he's the next Ryan Leaf. Like I'm not trying to compare things, and I'm not dismissing bad meetings or the idea he's disrespectful or whatever else, dismissive. What other words you want to use that he was in the meetings. But the NFL, talent plays out. And we have seen guys who have done a hell of a lot worse and are bigger red flags than Shador Sanders and handling a meeting poorly, that have gotten drafted a hell of a lot earlier than a quarterback going all the way down to the fifth round. Like, we could say it's the meetings, and you're not wrong, but to just flat out say, oh, they were terrified of drafting the next Ryan Leaf, who would be terrible. Okay, once you get to the second and third, really the third round, once you get to the third round, there is no more Ryan Leafs. You can't. If he's a bust, he's a bust third round pick. That, so is Hyatt with the Giants. Like, it's not, that's not a big deal. So once you got to a certain level, you're not worried about that anymore. And he still continued to fall. And names you never thought were going to get taken over him. It was one of the more stunning things. Again, now, was Aaron Rodgers a bigger prospect coming out of college? I don't remember. I mean, probably, right? He was certainly up for the number one pick. Alex Smith ended up getting it, but he was certainly up for the number one pick, but so was Shador Sanders. But yeah, he was probably a bigger prospect. But remember watching him waste away on stage at the NFL draft it's infamous. We talk about it all the time. I think my bingo players have heard Harkin 3 or 4 times. We go back to that every time we talk about a player dropping. We talk about watching the uncomfortable Aaron Rodgers sitting there in his suit as teams passed on him and passed on him. He got taken in with the 24th pick in the first round. This went all the way to the fifth round, the third day. It was crazy. It was crazy. And I mean, that's anyone ever talked. Well, we were just waiting to see when Shador was going to get picked. Every pick, oh my God, they passed him again. Oh my God, the Steelers passed on him again. Oh my God, the Browns passed on him again. Man, if he doesn't get taken by here, well, the Seattle took Milroe? Like, everything was about Sanders, and God knows the broadcast was too. And I know people are getting on Mel Kiper, including the rest of the panel on stage. But like it to me, and we're going to see all the different takes. And again, the one thing people are going to talk about race. I don't think it had anything to do with race. I think it had to do with his meetings, his father, his talent, whether or not he's worth the headache of a second quarterback or a backup quarterback once you got past an area where he's no longer a guy that you would focus on being the few. I mean, if it happens, great. I mean, the Browns right now, if he becomes the franchise quarterback, great. But they're no longer in a position where they have to give him any sort of real attempt to be the guy, and nobody would care. He's the fifth round pick. So once it got past that point, they're like, wow, do you want to take on Shedeur Sanders and have it be a story and deal with Deion and deal with all this stuff to have a guy who, you know, could be our backup quarterback in 2 years? Like, it's not worth it. So I think that had a role in it too. But, I mean, everyone's going to be talking about it. And Mel Kiper, to be fair, like, it is that jarring. For me, it's that jarring. I don't know about you. And I know, you know, Brett in Long Island was telling me how bad I look because I thought the Giants would draft him third. I thought a lot of teams. I thought the Saints would take him 9. Then I thought the Steelers would take him 21. I never thought that he would get to the 5th-round pick. But, like, that was the story. And I get on Mel Kiper's not wrong in what he was saying. It was shocking. Shocking.
Your official station to talk New York Knicks. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, so like this is the thing that makes me laugh a little bit. Because I understand that a lot of people didn't like Shedeur Sanders physically, tool-wise, and quarterback-wise. But like I just got a tweet. Like, watch some film of Shedeur. Weak arm, average speed, 6 foot nothing, marginal accuracy, mediocre pocket presence. Right? Like, okay. Like, let me, I won't even push back on everything. Right? Like, I feel the mediocre pocket presence is probably unfair to call it mediocre. I think he's better than mediocre. Marginal accuracy, I also think that's unfair. I think he's a lot more accurate than that.
He never had a pocket in college. Yeah, we probably don't even know.
That's probably a good point, yeah. Weak arm, I don't even know if I'd call it weak, but I won't argue it. Average speed, I think that's absolutely accurate. Like, he wasn't the greatest quarterback prospect ever. We all get that. But to say watch film, like, people who do this for a living every single year watch film. Like, Mel Kiper went on that big rant about the NFL has proven they don't know what they're doing with the quarterback position. Right? And I don't think he's wrong. Like, we've seen so many, the NFL has a real problem in understanding how to, you know, understand and pick out great quarterbacks on a consistent basis. There's no doubt they do, more than any other position. And it's the most difficult. And I'm not saying Mel Kiper necessarily has done a wonderful job of it, but I bet if you go through his career, you're going to find that he was right on guys probably as much as the NFL was. He's probably right there with the NFL. That's a guy who watches film. That's a guy who does his work. And he, after watching all the film, thought that Shedeur Sanders was the best quarterback. Now, I'm not saying he's right. And I'm not saying Cam Ward isn't going to be, or anybody else, or hopefully Jackson Dart is. I'm a Giants fan. But the idea that, hey, just watch the film. There's a reason he's a fifth-round pick. You can't say that to me. I'm sorry. That is not a viable excuse. You can't tell me his talent warrants a fifth-round pick. Not when so many guys who do this, even the guys who weren't his biggest fans, had him as either the second or third-best quarterback in this draft, bar none, and had him as a first-round pick grade almost exclusively. I didn't hear one guy talk about it. I'm telling you right now, he is a second, third-round pick. Not a single guy. Not worthy of a top pick. Not well, Carter and Hunter are on the board. Fine. A lot of people said that. Nobody had him as the sixth-best quarterback and the fifth-round pick. Nobody. So I understand your point. If you're like, hey, watch film, he wasn't that good, fine. I'm not saying he was deserving of the first round pick, of the first pick. I'm not even going to argue with you that he should have been the third overall pick. Fine. I would have drafted him third. That's how I would have done it, but that's fine. But you can't tell me, hey, look at the film. He's a fifth round pick. All this other stuff is noise. His father, the meetings, all of it, blah, blah, blah. Weak arm, mediocre pocket presence, mediocre this, mediocre that, no real foot speed, fifth round pick. Sorry. I appreciate you, LG on Twitter. But all the people that we watch year after year give me grades on these players whose job it is, who can be wrong and have been, of course. But all of them had him as at least the third best quarterback in this draft. And he was the sixth taken, and he was drafted in the fifth round. It was not about talent and talent alone. No way in hell. Obviously, the meetings were a part of it, and I'm sorry. You can't tell me that his father and other circumstances around it weren't. Like, that's, it's just too much of a, it's too much of a precipitous drop. Mike in Seatalkit. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's up, Chris?
What's going on?
I think what you're missing here is that the league, the NFL, is still the only league driven by the product and not the player. And I think a lot of GMs looked at this and said, we are a 53-man roster, and you got one guy coming in disrespecting meetings, disrespecting the process. And yeah, if you want to call it collusion, fine. But I think it was more or less a message sent to a guy that was looking to be bigger than a brand before he even took a snap. You don't want that. You played football. I played football.
Okay.
You don't want someone that thinks they're bigger than the team.
Did it? Well, Eli Manning felt he was bigger than the San Diego Chargers.
Okay, and guess what?
And did anybody care? Did he not get picked?
People killed the Mannings for what they did.
Was he drafted in the fifth round? And I know his meetings went better. I understand that. But I'm just saying,
compare the physical characteristics and physical talents of Peyton and Eli Manning.
You took that out of it. You took that out of it and made it about the brand. That we're having a discussion.
If you're not going to be a physical specimen, and you're just an average guy, he's just an average quarterback, given what you just said. He's the second or third best quarterback in a weak quarterback class.
Yeah, not a fifth-round pick.
Standout,
a fifth-round
pick? He shouldn't have been a fifth-round pick. No, absolutely not.
Okay.
But if you're going to be a mediocre talent in a mediocre class, you then need to show intangibles that you have some semblance of humility. If it's just talent alone, that wouldn't be the problem for most of these guys. The problem is, you have to not only be – quarterback is the hardest position in sports.
Mm-hmm.
You have to not only be physically gifted, but you have to also have some semblance of humility and an intellectual capacity.
What makes you think he doesn't have the intellectual capacity when his greatest strength is reading the defense?
I don't believe his intellectual capacity is what failed him, was what I was about to say. His lack of humility failed him.
I guess, but don't you also need self-confidence?
Okay, here's the difference. Self-confidence and blatant dismissiveness are not in the same room. If you're going to be blatantly dismissive of the process, a lot of guys are going to turn around and say, we don't need you as an NFL team. We can find someone that is just as good and maybe buys into the system better. Look, Brock Purdy is a classic example. Who the hell saw Brock Purdy playing for the Cyclones in college?
Right.
Having a really good with the 49ers.
Yeah, but that's not just about buy-in. I mean, everybody drafted that late is willing to buy in.
Brock Purdy coming into the pre-draft process acting like Shador Sanders. He'd be working.
Yeah, but Shador Sanders was a projected top pick. He wasn't Brock Purdy. Shador Sanders was going to go 1, 2, or 3 for a lot of... Now, look, I'm not saying he didn't handle the process wrong. You're right. And he was dismissive, I would think, particularly, of teams he didn't expect to draft, which is a poor way to handle it. I'm not saying he didn't do himself any disservice. Clearly, he did. But I think when he drops to the fifth, we're talking about his dad. We're talking about, like, the whole situation. It's just odd. You didn't find it odd that he dropped all the way to the fifth? Like, again, I'm not saying there's any major conspiracy. I'm not even saying collusion. I also think a major part of this is, well, now, certainly with his father, is it worth the headache of him? And then, is it worth the headache as a second and third round pick and not the guy I'm going to deem as my franchise quarterback? Because now I got an unhappy Shedeur Sanders and I have an unhappy Deion Sanders. Like, do I want to bring him in after, he's had this miserable draft? Like, I think that's part of it, too. It started to just become, like, a thing where it's like, well, now I don't even know how can I touch him. He's going to be miserable. He's going to be unhappy. I don't have him as someone valued, necessarily. I'm not picking him in a spot where I'm guaranteeing him anything. Why not just take another player that can help my team as opposed to, like, I get that was part of it, too, once he fell to a certain point. I think all of those things played into it. And clearly the meetings, I mean, if it's, again, we don't know these things to be true, but enough people are saying it where he clearly handled the meetings terribly and handled the process terribly. And he didn't throw at the pro day, at the combine. He did everything that top picks do. Cam Ward did the exact same thing as far as not throwing during the combine and all that stuff. Like, he handled it like he was going to be a top pick, just the way Cam Ward handled it. And that probably hurt him, too. Everything played into it. But I it's just, like, it's not just his ability. And fifth is far too long. Fifth is far too much a fall. I mean, when you look at it, there are videos of his dad, saying, listen, we're going to choose where we go, this, that. And I want to, if I were ever to come to the NFL, it would be to coach my son. I'm sure there's a lot of coaches who don't want to draft a quarterback who handled the meetings that way and could be easily disillusioned with what I'm selling, and an owner who's now invested a first round pick in this player. Coaches are expendable, first round picks not so much, at least for the first couple of years, and they could turn around and sell the franchise on bringing in Deion Sanders, who's now, one, Deion Sanders, and two, has been a successful coach in college. Like, I think that's part of it, too. I think the whole situation played into it. It was a perfect storm of him dropping all the way to the fifth. But it's not just talent. That's for sure. He is more talented than a fifth-round pick. And typically, despite meetings, despite red flags in their background, despite problems with the law, despite anything, talent will outweigh all of that. That's how the NFL has handled this for the most part. All we have seen terrible things done. We have seen players with, he came in playing music out of headphones. We've seen guys commit crimes get drafted. And, like, typically, talent overweighs all of that. And, yeah, he wasn't a superstar quarterback, but he's better than a fifth-round pick. It's just an odd scenario. It was extremely fascinating watching everything. And then you get into getting prank phone called. And I felt for the kid. Like, look, again, he did it to himself in many ways. I'm not saying that. I get it. He handled the meetings terribly. And he did a lot of this to himself. But, having him go through it, I felt for the kid. I am rooting extremely hard for him. I am in the camp of Shedeur Sanders. I will be rooting for him. I think he's going to play games next year. I think he's the best quarterback in the room for the Browns. And I hope he has a really successful career. Because I think he absolutely should have got picked before the fifth round. He should have been a round two guy. The Browns probably should have taken him. Hey, but look, they got him fifth. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Quick break. We'll come back. Talk a little bit more about Giants and Jets, specifically with the draft. And Carter with the New York Giants asking to wear the greatest number in Giants franchise history for the greatest player, arguably greatest defensive player to ever play the game. Abdul Carter wanted to wear 56 for the New York Giants. Astounding. 888-808-109. We'll get to that as well. McMonagle here with you, as well as the baseball game. Mets blow a game where they were winning 7-1 in the seventh. The Yankees blowing Friday night's game with Devin Williams, who is no longer the closer. We'll get to that. Win both games of a doubleheader to win the series. But the story there is Devin Williams out as closer as the New York Yankees.